That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
In the limelight.
A new survey has shown that economists consider the probability of recession in the United States to approximately 70% in 2023. Also, nearly 9 out of 10 Americans are worried about economic recession, while two-thirds of voters believe the country's economy is in recession. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Hill newspaper has covered the story. According to a survey conducted by the National Association of Manufacturers, 62% of manufacturers expect the U.S. economy to enter a recession this year. The survey also found that 69% of manufacturers have a positive outlook for their company, the lowest figure since the third quarter of 2020. They cited struggles in attracting and finding workers, continued supply chain problems, and high raw material costs. It's the latest warning sign that the U.S. manufacturing industry is slowing down amid weakening demand and higher borrowing costs stemming from the Federal Reserve's interest rate hikes. The Institute for Supply Management said on Wednesday, 4th of January, that manufacturing contracted for the second straight month in December and reached its weakest point since May of 2020. To add insult to injury, some of manufacturers' top priorities fell flat at the end of last Congress, including changes to taxes, permitting and immigration policy. Congress refused to scrap new rules implemented this year as part of Republicans' 2017 tax bill that require companies to spread out their research and development tax deductions over 5 years rather than write them off immediately. Large manufacturers, including Ford and Boeing, lobbied lawmakers to reverse the new rules, warning that they would lead to layoffs. Lawmakers also rejected a proposal from Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, to streamline the permitting process for energy projects, a top priority for manufacturers that drew opposition from many environmental groups. The National Association of Manufacturers president and CEO, Jay Timmons, said in a statement, "Much-needed permitting reforms and provisions to strengthen our ability to conduct research and development, buy machinery and finance job-creating investments, which we need to promote growth within the sector, were left on the cutting room floor last year." The National Association of Manufacturers survey was conducted from 29th of November through to 13th of December and received 337 responses. The Wall Street Journal has also covered the same story. According to a new survey, two-thirds of economists at the largest U.S. financial institutions believe a recession will occur in 2023. The survey of 23 primary dealers, the large financial firms that do business directly with the U.S. Federal Reserve, found the majority expect a recession in the coming year. Among the top economic concerns cited included dwindling personal savings, the decline in the housing market, and tightening lending standards at many banks. It follows the U.S. Federal Reserve's rapid rate interest rate hikes to battle soaring inflation last year, which saw the benchmark rate rise from near zero in March to a range of 4.25% to 4.5% by the end of the year. The central bank forecast that will reach a range of 5% to 5.25% by the end of 2023. Its forecast doesn't call for a rate cut before 2024. The US Federal Reserve policy rate is now at its highest level since prior to the 2008 recession, as the central bank attempts to bring inflation down without triggering an economic downturn. By the Fed's preferred measure, inflation is still running nearly three times its 2% goal, having risen earlier in 2022 at its fastest pace in the past 40 years. Rising prices have forced consumers to rapidly spend down savings, which soared during the COVID-19 pandemic thanks to stimulus measures and a slowdown in spending. The personal saving rates dropped to 2.4% in November, far below the pre-pandemic average of 8.8% in 2019. Consumers have also increasingly been tapping lines of credit to make ends meet. According to U.S. Federal Reserve data, total household borrowing reached $16.51 trillion in the third quarter, a $351 billion increase from the prior quarter, an 8.3% jump from a year ago, the fastest annual increase in the past 14 years. Higher interest rates have had the most dramatic impact on the housing market, which saw a plunge in sales activity in the second half of last year. The 30-year fixed-rate mortgage breached 7% in October for the first time since 2002, more than doubling in the span of 9 months. It has deflated a red-hot housing market fueled by historically low borrowing costs and a rush to the suburbs during the pandemic. According to the National Association of Realtors, existing home sales fell 7.7% in November from October, and November sales dropped a whopping 35.4% year over year. The National Association of Realtors added that the current 10-month streak of declines is the longest on record in the data that dates back to 1999. Banks have also tightened their lending standards in recent months, a traditional leading indicator of recession. The British newsletter, the Financial Times, has also reported on the same story. A top International Monetary Fund official said inflation in the United States has not turned a corner yet, and it is too early for the Federal Reserve to declare victory in the fight on rising prices. Geeta Gopinath, a deputy managing director of the fund, urged the U.S. Central Bank to press ahead with rate rises this year. She said it was important for the Federal Reserve to maintain restrictive monetary policy until a very definite, durable decline in inflation was evident in wages and industries not related to food or energy. She added, if you see the indicators in the labor market and if you look at very sticky components of inflation like services inflation, I think it's clear that we haven't turned the corner yet on inflation. The comments follow recent data showing that job openings, closely watched as a proxy for labour market shortages and pressure on employers to hand out wage increases higher than normal, fell only moderately in the month of November in the United States. Minutes of the US Federal Reserve's December 13-14 policy meeting, published on Wednesday, 4th of January, showed that officials agreed that the central bank now needed to balance its fight against price pressures with the risk of slowing down the economy too much. In October, the International Monetary Fund cut its outlook for global economic growth in 2023, reflecting the continuing drag from the Ukraine war, as well as inflation pressure and higher interest rates engineered by central banks to rein in those price pressures.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in Hull.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Youth Station. A very warm welcome to yet another episode. I'm your host, Zainab, and I have with me...
Asma, yes.
My favorite co-host.
I'm so happy to be here with you once more.
Here.
It's always a pleasure, actually.
Yeah, same
to
here.
To share the table with you.
Same here. So, Asma, when we actually start talking about the Holy Book of Quran, when we open it and the opening surah, the Surah Fatiha, or also called Saba Masani, or has many other names, or it's called the summary of whole Quran. And you know, in this surah we have one of the verses wherein Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala actually teaches us how to make dua, how to actually, you know, start talking to him.
Yeah,
it's not just like I want to talk to Allah and I will just say, oh Allah, give me this and that and that and that. He actually says, first of all, seek help in my name. So when we go actually through the grammatical analysis of the verse, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Bay in itself means seeking help from the name of Allah. Isma Allah, you know, the name of Allah. So I seek help in the name of Allah, who is kind, who is generous, who is
merciful.
Yeah. So then we have one of the very beautiful things in this surah, and that is Ihdina as-sirat al-mustaqim. O Allah, show me the righteous path. And then Allah again answers in the very next page in Surah Baqarah. He says, Zalika al-kitabu la rayba fihi hudan lil-muttaqin. This is a book, without a doubt, a guidance for the righteous, the pious, or those who fear Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So actually, Allah is teaching us, when you want to seek guidance, when you want to seek a right path, refer to my book.
Yeah, that is going to show you the way in order not to go astray.
Yeah, so he's actually answering the question in a very, you know, when you seek help, he's again guiding you. Hudan lil muttaqin is what? What is the guidance for the muttaqin? What is the guidance for the righteous people?
It means that there is an instruction book for you out there.
Yeah, and he answers it very fast on the very next page.
So Zainab, you're saying that if we put this book in front of ourselves as a mirror, as a model, then we're going to live a prosperous life.
We are definitely for sure, but I am trying to say, actually, we always say to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, show me the right path, and then we are moving like blind, and we are waiting for some miracle to happen.
Groping in the dark.
Allah will tell you, okay, that's the path, go on that path. No, that's not going to happen. He's answering on the very next page, refer to my book.
Yeah.
Everything is in the book.
You have to go and have some effort and contemplation upon the verses in that book in order to get what is the true path and how you can achieve it and attain it.
All the paths are written out there in the book.
Yeah.
Like, is there anything that caught your attention, that actually taught you something that was very different from that no other thing could teach you, actually. Because there are parents, there are societies.
Yeah.
There are
different online courses.
There are different online courses. There are so many. There are teachers, there are guides, there are books, and
many things.
Who would teach you this is good and this is bad?
Mm-hmm.
But was there something striking in your life about Quran?
And there's something very much interesting, Zainab. There are, as a literary person, as the one who's so much interested in literature, I have read so much of novels and I have watched so much of movies. But the interesting thing is that when you read a book once, you can never go back ever once more.
To read the boring book again.
It is not boring, you know. You know the whole story. And now you can go for the quotes that you have highlighted there. But you cannot go through it once more. Twice, three times.
It's very interesting. You know the language.
Yeah.
You understand things. And
fully.
It's something of your interest.
There's nothing hidden in it.
Yeah. And now
What about Quran?
And now, yeah, see the difference? We can, and the nice thing is that the more we read it, the more we go through different lines of it, we feel
every
more
time
attached.
Find something different.
Yeah, that makes it clear that this book is different and it has got a spirit. And they, as they say,
Allah would have never challenged, like, get one surah like this.
Yeah, yeah. And we have it in our narration that God himself said that when you pray, when you use your own language to get connected to Allah, it's you talking to him. But when you read the verses of the Holy Book of Quran, it's Allah talking to you.
Wow.
And it's very interesting.
Wow.
That feeling that you get in your hard times, in the dark days of your life, in the rainy days, when you think that, okay, he has forgotten about me and he is not close to listen to whatever I am saying to him. Just thinking about this matter and definitely going through the lines of this book, it would make it more even clearer for you that he is near you and he is listening to you and he actually is responding to your questions.
Exactly. Let's put it here and go for a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Inna hadha al-Qur'an yahdi lil-lati hiya aqwam wa yubashshiru al-mu'minina alladhina ya'maluna as-salihat wa yubashshiru المؤمنين الذين يعملون الصالحات أن لهم أجرا كبيرا.
Indeed, this Quran guides to that which is most suitable and gives good tidings to the believers who do righteous deeds, that they will have a great reward.
Station. This is Zainab with
Asma. It's your service.
How Quran changed our lives, or how it has impacted our lives. So
yeah. And we were talking about how interesting is the fact that going through different chapters of this book is something that will never tire you out.
You always learn something new. It always adds to your knowledge. As a leader of revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei also says that we are very good in Quran. We are good in memorization. We are good in reading it. We are good in tartil, and we're good in actually, you know, doing so many things. But we are lacking behind in contemplation.
Yeah, which is, I guess, the most important one.
Yeah, because you gotta know why this particular verse is in this chapter. Why not in any other chapter? And what is the relation between the verses?
But you know what, Zainab? I would say something else. Sometimes when we think about something being done in the most and the best way, and the most perfect and the best way, we would put it off. You know what I mean? I mean that if I think, okay, I have to go and learn how to read perfectly like this skilled readers of the Holy Book who recite that with the special format that is called tartil. If I think that I have to go and read the Holy Book only in this case and only in the case that I contemplate for each and every line of this book, then there is this chance that I may not go for reading it at all. While we know that even reading the book and going through the appearance,
because when you start with contemplation, when you first start with reading,
mm-hmm.
and then you go for translation, and then you go for contemplation. Contemplation is not something that comes at the very beginning. So you first got to learn reading.
No,
then you learn translations, and when you get contemplation meaning, then you love to go through those verses again.
Yeah, I agree. But there's this thing that I wanted also to say, and it's about this modern life and how busy we are. And sometimes we don't even get the chance to read a verse of this book in daily. You know what I mean?
I think it's all about action. It's not about something printed on the paper. As long as this is not affecting your actions, it's not putting you into action, I don't think you're reading Quran. Even if you're reciting it each day in the morning, but you're doing something else, it's not changing your actions, it's not changing your life, then I don't think there's much fun in reciting it. You know, you take a basket, that's dirty, okay? And you go and fill water in it. What will happen? Will you ever be able to fill a basket with water? No. Because a basket is basket. The water will leak from all sides. But at least...
the Holy Book is but different.
Imam Ali al-Islam is saying that. What I'm trying to say is that the dirtness of the basket will at least get cleaned when you go and actually try to bring water every day. But the actual meaning... what makes meaning is that getting water into it. And you won't be able to get water until and unless you actually take some other
vessel. So that's very true. Yeah.
So it's all about your capacities. And there are so many different things that you learn, you get to know. Like I realized the importance of time going through Surah Asr. I realized how bad jealousy is that women have going through Surah Falaq. I realized a lot of things. And I'll say how. After a short break, what do you say?
Welcome back, dear listeners. Well, this is Youth Station. We are talking about the Holy Book of Quran and how it has changed our life. We actually went through too much of points. And right now, I would love to ask you, Zainab. You said that it had made some changes into your life. Tell us about those changes.
It's very easy to say that pin hopes on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala only and not on people, but in practice it's really, really difficult. So I used to have hopes from people and I used to expect actually, and then I would wait for the consequences, and again the consequences would come negative until this worse actually striked me, which we recite each and every day, and not only once, not only twice, as many as times.
Which is?
إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ وَإِيَّاكَ نَسْتَعِينَ.
Yeah.
We worship only you and we only ask you for help. So when we are saying to him, we only ask you for help, what should I expect one or every third person to do something for me? Seek help from you, but I am seeking help in my heart from so many other people around me with my expectations, not directly like just telling them, but these expectations means that I am expecting help from you in a certain case, in a certain manner, you know. This is one, like not to expect from people, because expecting is something that's very, very difficult to control.
And pin all your hopes on Allah himself.
Yeah, it's very difficult that you do something for people and then you don't.
And Zainab, there's also another verse which is so interesting. I don't remember the exact number of the verse, but somewhere in this Mahola book, there is this verse that says, if God backs you up, if he supports you, then there is no single one in this world who could drag you down.
Exactly.
And this is very nice and full of hopes, and it gives you such a pride,
back,
you know?
A back, a support that you have someone.
You feel like he would never let you down. He would never let you alone on your own self.
There's,
you know,
again a very similar thing that, to what you said. It's in the verse 2 and 3 of Surah Talaq, which says so many things. But the point that I want to mention over here is the towards the end of the verses, which is that if you only practice taqwa, which is you carry out the wajibat, the obligatories, and stay away from the muharramat, which is stay away from the forbidden things. So if you do this, this is practicing taqwa, to carry out the obligatory and just stay away from the forbidden. Yeah. If you do this, just this, see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, how kareem, how nice,
generous,
how merciful, how generous he is. He's saying, if you just do this, I will send you from the ways you have never expected.
Yeah, I will give you blessings from the way you would never expect them. When you pin all your hopes on Allah, he would back
you
up.
Whatever he says, it's all truth. Just believe in it. Yeah. It's just believe in it, like all the verses.
It's all about the assurance in your heart. And right now, our time is finished for today's episode. It was such an interesting session with you, Zainab. I hope all the audience enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, and I would suggest audiences to go for contemplation as well after translations.
Yeah, that would be so good. Thank you for staying tuned. Thank you for staying with us.
You were listening to Youth Station from IRIP English Radio. Until another session,
I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
With a coming to power of the extreme right-wing Israeli politician Benjamin Netanyahu, the tension between Palestinians and Israelis has increased. For example, the recent incursion of the Minister of National Security of the Zionist regime to the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque compound was followed by strong international condemnations. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Palestinian Wafa news agency has covered this story and tells us more. Palestine's foreign ministry has strongly condemned the intrusion of Israel's far-right security minister into the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds, warning that the violation of international law as well as the historical status quo of the site could trigger a religious war. It said in a statement on Wednesday, 4th of January, "We alarmingly call on the international community to act urgently and halt the impending explosion of the situation in the Palestinian territories and the grave threats that Israeli crimes and violations pose to international peace and security." The statement added, "Ben-Gvir is widely regarded as a fascist who has repeatedly made provocative moves against Palestinians and the sacred Al-Aqsa Mosque and has frequently stoked violence and terror with his inflammatory remarks, hateful threats, and controversial actions." The Palestinian Foreign Ministry said the Palestinian leadership holds the occupying Israeli regime and its politicians and officials fully responsible for the repercussions of their continued illegal and provocative measures, which will have far-reaching consequences for regional and international peace and security. The statement said, Israel's continued acts of aggression at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound are meant to cause division so as to facilitate Jewish worship there and impose Israeli control over the holy site. The statement added, "We remind the international community that Israel has no rightful claim or sovereignty over Al-Quds, including the old city of Al-Quds, its eastern sector, its walls, and its holy sites." The statement noted, "All countries and organizations must act urgently and collectively to condemn all Israeli acts of aggression and demand an immediate halt to the practices against the Palestinian people and their holy sites." Moreover, a group of Jordanian lawmakers on Wednesday, 4th of January, carried a motion urging the government to expel the Israeli ambassador to Amman. The move is a protest to the crimes against Palestinians and Ben Gavir's desecration of the holy Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. The Jordanian legislators also urged Arab and international parliaments to immediately take action against Israeli violations and called for revoking the nation's peace treaty with Israel. Speaker of the lower house of the Jordanian parliament, Ahmad Safadi, said Israel's provocative practices and incursions into the holy Al-Aqsa Mosque compound are proof of its terrorism, extremism, and destructive measures that fuel regional conflict. He demanded a cessation of such provocative and unacceptable acts, which would further escalate tensions in the region and undermine prospects for a political solution and a comprehensive peace plan. The Speaker of the lower house of the Palestinian Parliament, Ahmad Safadi, reiterated that only Jordan has sovereignty over the holy sites in the city of Al-Quds. The Al-Ahad television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. Palestinian resistance movements have condemned the visit by far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir to the holy site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, warning the occupying Israeli regime that there will be consequences for such acts of desecration. The Palestinian resistance groups made the remarks in a statement on Tuesday, 3rd of January, after Ben-Gvir stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied old city of Al-Quds under heavy security earlier in the day. They said Ben-Gvir's storming of Al-Aqsa Mosque was dangerous and has provoked the feelings of our nation and the Muslim world, and it may cause a religious war in the region. The statement added, the occupying regime is fully responsible for the consequences of its aggression against the Palestinian nation and their Islamic and Christian sanctuaries. The Palestinian resistance groups further called on all the Palestinians to mobilize to confront the Israeli regime's plots for Al-Aqsa and increase their presence at the holy site. They further noted that they are seriously monitoring Israeli extremism, continued attacks on Al-Aqsa, and will keep defending the holy site, stressing that the occupying regime will not be successful in changing the realities on the ground. Additionally, the head of the Political Bureau of the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, has called upon Muslim leaders to rise up and defend the Al-Aqsa Mosque against the dangerous plots of the Israeli regime and its most far-right cabinet in history. Ismail Haniyeh called for immediate and effective measures to safeguard Al-Aqsa Mosque and stop incursions and sinister plans of the Israeli occupiers. The Hamas leader said, "We would like to notify you of an imminent danger threatening our holy sites in the Palestinian territories, most notably the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, after the far-right Israeli administration took office and embarked on escalatory moves by allowing its national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, to storm the revered site with religious and political purposes." Ismail Haniyeh added, "This is a serious development that cannot be tolerated or accepted at all. It suggests the beginning of a new bout of violence across the Palestinian lands, which will have direct impact on the entire region." The English website of the Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. United Nations Security Council members have underscored the need to maintain a decades-old status quo at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds after the recent Israeli desecration of the holy site. The move was prompted on Thursday, 5th of January 2023, after a contentious visit by far-right Israeli minister Itamar Ben-Gvir to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, which infuriated Palestinians over the breach of the holy site status quo that allows only Muslim worship at the compound. The 15-member United Nations Council discussed the Israeli storming following a request by the United Arab Emirates and China, with the Palestinian and the occupying regime's representative trading barbs over the sacrilegious move at the world body.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life for IRIB English Radio. I am Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol, and one of my specialties is in enhancing the style for living. And my talk is based on the Quran and Islamic tradition. In this episode of the program, I will be going over a fact with regard to having a better knowledge about the real essence of our life. The fact is that when we are born, our life in this world begins, okay? But as soon as we start to know different things, know the environment and understand objects, understand people and so on, as we gain the power to analyze various things and differentiate between good and bad, gradually we realize, this is the point, we realize that we are going to face many struggles. We realize that there are many unwanted situations. There are many predicaments that we need to find a solution for them, and so on and so forth. Life could not be totally easy. Of course, life is full of beauty, full of good and enjoyable things. For example, calmness and tranquility. I don't want to ignore them, but I just want to point that we should not neglect that hardship is in its turn, or an unwanted situations are an inseparable part of our life. As much as we strive to solve these problems, we only can decrease the degree of these difficulties, and never we can wipe them totally out. Why I say that? Because sometimes we think that there are an achievement and a goal that we think we can have it. It is reachable. If we imagine that a specific goal is reachable, we try our best to have it. We try to gain it. But if we realize that some specific goals are not accessible at all, or are not reachable completely, or we can only have a portion of that goal, then we, instead of spending all of our energy on getting that, and then beat ourselves up for not having it, blaming ourselves and becoming disappointed instead of it, can easily do what we think that we should do or we could do, and then sit back calmly and accept our destiny. As a result, as I said, when the real essence of this world is that hardship is an inseparable part of our life, if we get stuck in an unsolvable entanglement, we should never become angry in gratitude to Allah or even disappointed. Let me here refer to one of the noble sayings of Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says in this regard, وَعْلَمْ بِأَنَّ الدَّهْرَ يَوْمَانِ. Know that the world has two different days. يَوْمٌ لَكْ وَيَوْمٌ عَلَيْكْ. One for you and for your benefit, and the other one is against you. وَأَنَّ الدُّنْيَا دَالُ دُوَلٍ. And that the world is a house of changing authorities. فَمَا كَانَ مِنْهَا لَكْ أَتَاكَ عَلَىٰ ضَعْفِكْ. Whatever in it that is for your benefit, it will come to you despite your weakness. وَمَا كَانَ مِنْهَا عَلَيْكَ لَمْ تَدْفَعْهُ بِقُوَّتِكْ. And on the opposite, whatever of the days that are against you, you cannot push it away despite your strength and power. It means that if there is a day that is destined by Allah to be against us, as much as we try our best and as much as we use our power and might, we cannot escape from it. Let's have a break for a short time, and I will be back in a minute.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
We were talking about the real essence of this world so as to adjust ourselves with it more easily. As we understood from the mentioned hadith of Imam Ali, we always face two different versions of life, a good one, an unpleasable one. Sometimes we are destined to face the beauty side of the world, of our life. So even if we are weak or even be unaware at all, that beauty enters in our life and makes us happy, makes us joyful. But totally contrary, if we are doomed to encounter with the bad version of life, it will also come into our life regardless how powerful, strong, and mighty we are. This is the fact. Because of it, for example, we see that sometimes out of nowhere, someone may give us money. This is the beauty side of our life. A company may call us and offer us a job with a high income. Or for example, we may win in a competition and may will gain fame. On the other hand, if there comes a day that is against us, we may suddenly realize that, for example, someone whom we love so much passed away. Or maybe we lost a good fortune, we failed in an exam, or we may lose a game in a competition. For sure, paying attention to this reality of life can be very soothing. It is really relieving. It gives man great peace and it reduces the bitterness of failure. Because by this attitude and vision, if we face failure, we know that this is a part of everyone's life in this world. No one is always the winner, always successful, always happy or healthy. Let me add to it that usually when we face a failure, we lose hope because we think that we are unlucky or misfortunate. But if we realize that we are not the only one who faces the failure, if we realize that everyone in this world are like us, this helps us not to lose heart because we see that all people like us, we are in the same boat. Of course, what I mean is not that we do not try to have a better life, do not try to reduce the pain of so-called unpleasant phase of life, not at all. Rather, we have to try our best to find success, to be triumphant or to be victorious. But beside it, should be aware that we cannot control everything, cannot change the life into a 100% degree in harmony with our desires. Add to it that if we are knocked down in our life, let's use this terminology, it will give us more experience. We can check our strong points and weaknesses and try to work on our strong points and become stronger, and also pay attention to our weak points and try to compensate. This is the positive side and of analyzing the situations. Now let me end my discussion by this gold fact. The world is under the management of Allah, under the supervision of Allah, and Allah is the supervisor of all of our affairs, and nothing of happiness and hardship is without wisdom, and we have to try to find the wisdom behind every action that we face in our life. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he
fires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo Jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The head of the International Monetary Fund, Kristalina Georgieva, has issued a dire warning over the economic outlook in 2023, saying that this year is going to be even tougher than the year 2022. That is because the U.S., EU, and Chinese economies have slowed down. The Ukraine conflict, soaring prices, and hiked interest rates, and the rise of the COVID have contributed to the slowdown in the global economy. She also said that a third of the world economy will be hit by a recession in 2023.
For most of the world economy, this is going to be a tough year, tougher than the year we leave behind. Why? Because the three big economies, US, EU, China, are all slowing down simultaneously. Half of the European Union will be in recession next year. China is going to slow down this year further. Next year would be a tough year for China. Mm-hmm. And that translates into negative trends globally.
Back in October, the IMF slashed its outlook for global economic growth in 2023. It blamed the gloomy outlook on the ongoing conflict in Ukraine and tougher monetary policies. According to Georgieva, China will face a very difficult start to the year 2023. That's because it is likely to grow at or below global growth for the first time in 40 years, she said.
China has slowed down dramatically in 2020. Two, because of this tight zero COVID policy. For the first time in 40 years, China's growth in 2022 is likely to be at or below global growth. That has never happened before. And looking into next year, for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, the relaxation of COVID restrictions would mean bushfire COVID cases throughout China.
also said that the U.S. economy may avoid a recession, but warned a strong labor market there may lead the U.S. Federal Reserve to keep interest rates tight so as to combat high inflation, which could have negative economic consequences of its own. The IMF warning comes amid similar predictions by other institutions. UK-based Center for Economics and Business Research has said that the global slide into a recession next year, as a number of economies will contract due to surging borrowing costs introduced to combat inflation. K. Daniel Neufeld said, "We expect central bankers to stick to their guns in 2023, despite the economic costs. The cost of bringing inflation down to more comfortable levels is a poorer growth outlook for a number of years to come." The report is more pessimistic than the most recent forecast by the International Monetary Fund. Meanwhile, oil prices continue to slide, weighed down by China's rising COVID cases and a recession warning from the IMF. The warning comes amid a worsening economic crisis in developed nations. Just recently, Germany's Federal Statistical Office said that the country is grappling with its highest annual inflation in more than 70 years. According to official data, full-year inflation reached 7.9% in 2022 amid surging energy and food prices. The last time annual inflation was near that level was in the year 1951, when it stood at 7.6% as the post-war economic boom began. And the UK faces one of the worst recessions among the world's leading industrialized nations this year.
We're not the government. We haven't been in power for 12 years. Right, every aspect of society that's been impacted by government policy. 10 years of austerity, cuts to the economy, slowing growth, a badly handled Brexit, whatever your view on Brexit was, right, has all led to where we are today. But the fact that we've got so many people out on strike and so many people suffering, only the government can change it, or a change of government can change it.
The fallout from spiraling inflation triggered by the pandemic and the Ukraine conflict will persist for longer in the UK than in other G7 nations, and the country's recovery will be one of the weakest.
In November 2022, the Republican Party won the majority of votes to the House of Representatives. They vowed to go after Democrats and President Joe Biden, but now cracks have appeared with the party itself. In a historic incident, the GOP failed to nominate the House Speaker. Party leader Kevin McCarthy got just 203 votes in two rounds, less even than Democrat Hakeem Jeffries in the GOP-controlled chamber, and fared even worse, with 202 votes in round three. It went to six rounds, but yet McCarthy could not gain the votes. It was a tumultuous start to the new Congress and pointed to a difficult road ahead with Republicans now in control of the House. A new generation of conservative Republicans, many aligned with Donald Trump's Make America Great Again agenda, want to upend business as usual in Washington and were committed to stopping McCarthy's rise without concessions to their priorities. It is widely believed that a revolt of ultra-hardliners has dealt a humiliation to McCarthy.
Those of us who will not be voting for Kevin McCarthy today take no joy in this discomfort that this moment has brought. But if you want to drain the swamp, you cannot put the biggest alligator in charge of the exercise.
McCarthy became the first candidate to fall short in a first ballot for Speaker in a century. The impasse means Republicans are unable even to assume the control that they won in the midterms, as a new House can't yet be sworn in. The standoff over McCarthy has been building since Republicans appeared on track to win the House majority in the midterm elections in November. A new generation of Trump-aligned Republicans led the opposition to McCarthy, believing that he's neither conservative enough nor tough enough to battle Democrats.
And they even came to the position where one, Matt Gaetz, said, "I don't care if we go to plurality and we elect Hakeem Jeffries, and it hurts the new frontline members not to get reelected." Well, that's not about America, and I will always fight to put the American people first, not a few individuals that want something for themselves. So we may have a battle on the floor, but the battle is for the conference and the country, and that's fine with me.
While the Senate remains in Democratic hands, House Republicans are eager to confront Biden after 2 years of the Democrats controlling both houses of Congress. But disagreements to choose the House Speaker is an ominous sign for the party and its conservative agenda. Even if McCarthy succeeds to be the Speaker, he'll be a weak figure who may be in office but barely in power. The war, which started with the Tea Party backlash to the Obama administration, is far from over.
We will compromise, but we will not capitulate. And there's a very serious difference. There's 222 Republicans in our conference now. So if 20 people are able to drive this train however they want to, 202 of us might as well go home, because that means they are the conference. That means they those 20 people will be the majority. Well, that is capitulation, and we will not do that. Compromise, yes.
The fractious support for McCarthy is over the direction of the GOP between swing district moderates and conservatives who have taken up the populist agenda of the former President Donald Trump. It is now believed that the chaos highlights the dilemma facing House Republicans.
You have 20 people demanding that 201 surrender to them unconditionally. Well, I will not surrender unconditionally. If you have conditions, give them to us. We'll consider them. Doesn't mean we'll do them, but you have to talk about them. But we've asked and we've asked, what is it you want? What do you need? But you have 20 people demanding the unconditional surrender of, including this group of warriors. We will not unconditionally surrender. Tell us what you want. We might surrender if you tell us the terms.
Analysts say no matter the concessions made to some of those on the far right, they simply will not relent and join other Republicans. The crisis is even more poignant as the party is set to brace for the presidential election set to be held in 2024. It now appears the fractures that Trump created within the Republican Party are deeper than ever before. With Trump still desperate to be elected president, it is unlikely the GOP will be able to unite behind another leader and change its electoral fortunes anytime soon.
It didn't take more than a day after the most controversial and right-wing cabinet took over in Israel, headed by Benjamin Netanyahu. The UNGA acted swiftly and asked the ICJ to consider the consequences for Israel over its occupation of Palestinian territories.
Israeli practices and settlement activities affecting the rights of the Palestinian people and other Arabs of the occupied territories. End of quote.
It appeared as though the timing was pre-planned and that the resolution was a signal to the new administration. Lots of cheers from PA Ambassador to the UN on the matter, though.
This vote and request comes one day after the new Israeli government was formed, pledging to accelerate colonial and racist policies against the Palestinian people.
It came as no surprise that the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu had the complete opposite view, saying that Israel is not bound by the UN vote. But does this resolution and referral to the ICJ even make a difference where Israel is concerned, or Palestinians for that matter? Definitely not. The reasons speak for themselves. As far as the ICC is concerned, Israel is not a party to the Rome Statute that established the ICC. This is while the International Criminal Court has determined that it does have jurisdiction over the territories occupied by Israel despite Israel's insistence to the contrary. So what is the point of all of this if it won't change the facts on the ground? Well, aside from Israel not being a member of the ICC, it disputes its jurisdiction on the basis that Palestine is not a sovereign state that is capable of being a party to the Rome Statute. The UNGA areas of focus have been issues that Israel has not heeded, nor has it even taken into account. Violation by Israel on the rights of the Palestinian people to self-determination, as well as altering the demographic composition of Al-Quds, is something that Israel has been actively doing. Not only that, coming right out of the gates, this administration has already said that it will go against the resolution. When it comes to the UN, Israel has had the most UN resolutions slapped against it, over 70 in counting. Israel has followed none. The Israeli ambassador Gilad Erdan has called the resolution a moral stain on the UN. He said no international body can decide that the Jewish people are occupiers in their own homeland. Adding any decision from a judicial body which receives its mandate from the morally bankrupt and politicized UN is completely illegitimate. The UNGA resolution also exposes the hypocrisy of the so-called normalization